Welcome to Inspirational Tales. When my guests on this podcast experience the most challenging times of their lives, they use these hardships to learn, grow, and better themselves. And as a result, they are now thriving in life. Their stories are ones of resilience, strength, and overcoming adversity. So sit back and join me as we celebrate them turning their challenges into triumphs. My guest on this episode is Lauren Spear. In 2018, Lauren fell at work and hit her head, which resulted in her injuring her brain. Lauren's condition proved to be difficult to diagnose, but with persistence and help from her GP and a specialist, she was diagnosed with post-concussion syndrome. Lauren has undergone extensive rehabilitation over the past few years and has come a long way since her accident. In this interview, Lauren discusses her injury and how it has affected her life. She explains why she started her blog, The Orange Butterfly, and also the work that she is now doing within the community to raise awareness for concussion and brain injuries. I hope that this interview gives you a greater understanding of what it is like to live with a brain injury, and I thank Lauren for being so open and honest with sharing her story. Hi, Lauren. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. So I always like to start off the interviews before the accident or injury or whatever it is that's happened to get a bit of an idea about what you were like as a person. So can you take us back before you had your brain injury and tell us a bit about what you were like and what your life was like back then?
Yes. Yeah. Pre-accident, Lauren was a very active and social person. I was always busy. I was at the gym most mornings before work. I worked as a special education teacher here in Adelaide. So my days were always full on, always busy, always something new happening, which I really loved. Dancing was a big part of my life as well. So since the age of 4, I had been a ballet and Irish dancer. So most of the time when my friends were going off to parties on the weekend, I couldn't go because I was training for nationals and state championships for Irish dancing and my ballet exams. So it was a big part of my life, but I absolutely loved it. Yeah, I loved it. It's so much fun. And I'm sad that it's not part of my life the same way it was before my accident now, but hopefully that's a goal for the future. Yeah, I had a big group of friends. I loved going out on the weekends. I have a very close and loving family. I'm the oldest of 3 siblings. I have a younger brother and a younger sister, and they're both very passionate about what they do and very goal-orientated and driven people. So I think we're all really similar in those traits and characteristics about ourselves. I was very goal-driven, very much a planner. I liked knowing what was right in front of me and what was going to happen. So you can imagine when my accident happened and all that kind of planning and goal-orientated person sort of went out the window, it was one of the challenges that came up. But yeah, I'd like to think I was probably in the peak of my physical fitness. I don't think I was in a better position before my accident with my health and my fitness, which looking back now, I think that was probably one of the main reasons why I'd come so far in my recovery the last 3 years, was because I did probably put my health and fitness first a few years ago, which kind of helped me with all my achievements to date. But yeah, that was basically Lauren before my accident.
You loved your job. This was your second go at a career, is that correct? You went to uni and you studied something else?
I did. I went to uni and I studied biomedical science. All through high school, I didn't even picture myself doing anything else. I loved science at school. I was good at it. That was it. I was going to do something in science. So I think that's also a big part of my personality, is when I set my mind to something, I'm that's it. That's it for me. I'm focused on achieving that. And so I kind of get tunnel vision, I guess, sometimes. I didn't really explore other options for myself. So I applied for my science degree. I got in. It was amazing. And I knew first semester in that I absolutely hated it. It was not for me. Being, you know, 5-hour labs coming up every Friday, I was dreading being in a lab inside, not talking to anybody for 5 hours. It was just horrendous. And it took a long time for me to work out what else was out there and what else I really wanted to do. I stuck out the science degree for 2 years because everybody told me it was going to get better, and it got worse. Oh. It just got worse for me. And one day I was looking through the course guide, just going, there's got to be something else out there for me. And one page open and it read, double degree in early childhood education and disability studies. And I don't know, something just clicked inside of me. I felt like an idiot, to be honest, because I was like, why have I not been doing this from the very beginning? So I knew from that moment that I'd found something that I really, really wanted to do.
So on the 9th of May 2018, you went to work like any other day, but it kind of didn't turn out that way and your life did change from that date onwards. So can you tell us what happened on that day, please?
Yes, that was in my third year of teaching. I had previous experience teaching with lots of different age groups throughout the school that I was at, which I really, really enjoyed. And this was my first year teaching the brand new reception students, which I really loved. It was a very different style of teaching. It was much more hands-on and you never got a second to sit down really during the day, which was chaotic, but it was so much fun. And on this particular day, during a yard duty playground time for me, one of my young students was stuck on top of a big climbing frame dome that we have in the playground. And it always sort of happened. He loved climbing. He just would get a little bit anxious and didn't really know how to get himself down. So we'd always go over and help him navigate where to put his feet. On this particular day, I couldn't tell you why, I decided to climb up a couple of rails to get closer to him. I was helping him by pointing to where he needed to place his feet, and he got down to my level safely, all good. And then for some reason he decided to jump the rest of the way down. But before he jumped, he grabbed hold of my jumper and jumped holding onto me still. And I simply lost my balance, fell backwards and smashed the left side of my head on a big metal pole on the way down to the ground. And I think like it was in the space of 5 minutes, honestly. It was super quick and not a long time for something like that to change your whole life, which was something that I was very much unaware of at the time. I remember being completely out of it. I wasn't thinking properly. My young student, thankfully, was perfectly fine. He got up off the ground and ran off safely and continued to play, whereas I stayed on the ground for a while. My eyes were the first thing to go. I remember seeing double. It was blurry. I couldn't think properly. I was quite dazed on the ground and nobody witnessed my fall. So I don't really know how long I was laying there for. But I do remember after a while, I think the shock kind of set in and I ended up wanting to get up and get ice for my hands because my hands were killing me. And I looked down and there was like the tiniest graze on my hands. But for some reason, my mind was saying that I'd broken my wrist or something like that. I don't really know. So I got myself up off the ground. I'm not really sure how, and took myself into the staff room to get some ice. And that's when I told somebody what had happened. And my mum came to school and took me to hospital. And after a few hours, they discharged me home with a concussion and told me to report to my GP the next day and that I'd be back at work within a week. And that was it.
So you actually got up and you went to get ice yourself.
I did, yes.
How are you able to do that?
I don't know. I really don't know. I can't recall losing consciousness. If I did, it was probably only for a few seconds. But I really honestly think it was shock and the fact that, oh my God, I just fell off a piece of playground equipment that children climb on. So I don't know if it was a little bit of embarrassment, a whole lot of shock, and I just wanted to get myself out of there. I couldn't really tell you what I was thinking or feeling because I was clearly not processing things properly in that situation. And it didn't help that, I guess, without having somebody witness my fall, nobody could tell me that I shouldn't move and I didn't need to get myself up. So if I had someone that saw me fall, I probably wouldn't have got up.
Yeah, yep. So you went to the hospital and the hospital discharged you. What happened the next day when they said you go home, go see your GP? What were you like in the meantime?
A wreck. I was unable to get out of bed. I was basically unable to to function, really. I could barely open my eyes.
And they sent you home like that?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Mum had to help me get to the bathroom and back. And basically the only times that I was awake was to, you know, go to the bathroom, drink water, have a little bit of food. I wasn't really hungry. And all the rest of the time I had my eyes shut and I was asleep in my bed. I reported to my GP the next day and he knew that something was clearly wrong. So he monitored me. I had to report to him every single day. And come the following week, where I still had it in my head, what the hospital doctor told me was that I was going to be back at work and everything was going to be okay. I remember going to him the next week going, I was told I can go back to work. I need to go back to work. And I think at this point, and for a long time after, I wasn't taking my injury seriously because I didn't understand. I really didn't understand what I was in for or how big of an impact this fall was going to have on my life. And the most important thing to me at this particular time was my job. I put that above everything else in my life. My kids, I was constantly worried about them. I needed to go back to work. And my GP basically told me that there is no way I could. I'm very, very close with my GP. He's been a part of my life for a very long time. So after a little bit of convincing, he told me that he would give me 2 hours to go back to school and see how I went. And I remember being so pissed at him for that because I was like, I'm a teacher. I need to be at school like all day. But I took the 2 hours and I was like, I don't know, you know, what he's thinking. And I went to school the next day and I did not make it. I don't think I lasted 45 minutes. So this was a week after my fall. I remember standing in the corner of my classroom. All of my kids were running around, screaming, doing whatever they wanted to do. Because I couldn't remember how to get my kids settled. I couldn't remember how to run my class. And thankfully, I had the best SSO that ever existed. And she basically took over while I stood in the corner. It was a horrible feeling. It was just like I'd forgotten how to do my job. I knew what I had to do, but I just couldn't, for the life of me, remember how to do it. It was loud. My eyes were killing me. The kids were running around. I couldn't focus on them. I couldn't look at them. And I basically fell in a heap and went home and was in bed for the rest of the day. And that's basically how I spent the next few months, pushing myself to go to school for as little amount of time as possible and then back in bed. There was not one part of me that was willing to give up my job and getting back into my classroom. And that was the mindset that I took with me for a really, really long time throughout the first part of my recovery, a really, really long time. And it was just something that people went along with, but eventually it came to a crashing end.
Did you have a diagnosis at this stage?
The initial diagnosis was a mild concussion. And after 2 weeks where I was not getting any better, I was sent to my first specialist appointment, and that doctor basically told me that things were not right. I was in for a big ride ahead. And when I left, I remember him shouting out to Mum, going, give me a call when she's fully recovered, because I'm really interested to know how long it's going to take, because I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. And Mum was like, oh, like,
that's not a nice thing to hear.
Not a nice thing to hear. Yeah, and it just, from there, I started to see a lot of different specialists, and my rehab kind of started to kick in then. And I was diagnosed with a mild traumatic brain injury. It was post-concussion syndrome. I was diagnosed with a visual injury. So basically, the way my brain perceives what my eyes take in, so my visual system and my brain's ability to process what the visual system is bringing into my body are not working together anymore. So my brain's ability to process what my eyes are seeing is really, really slow. So that impacts every aspect of my life. You need your vision for everything, and it's incredibly challenging when that's not working properly. And a cervical spine injury, so the top part of my neck going into my skull, I have a lot of problems with. The latest diagnosis is a sleep disorder that has come out of my fall, which has been interesting to learn more about. But yeah.
So it's been a work in progress.
It's definitely been a work in progress. Yeah.
How was it actually diagnosed originally? Was it more so symptoms or was it scans and things?
In the hospital, it was symptoms and like physical assessments. After that, it was scans and physical assessments. And it was my neurophysio at the time who diagnosed me with post-concussion syndrome and sent me to the brain injury rehab unit here in Adelaide as an outpatient. And that's basically where I met my rehab physician who took over overseeing my whole recovery. And she spoke to me about post-concussion syndrome and brain injury and how my life was going to change from here on out.
How scary was that for you, hearing all of this? Your life's going to change, you know, the doctor telling you that it may take a very, very long time, not being able to work like you were before. How did you cope with all of that?
I didn't. Yeah. I mean, I did. I got through it and I'm still getting through it. But I guess at the time, I think my body kind of almost shut off. It's like I became numb to a lot of it. It was like, you know, in the matter of seconds, my life went from dancing, school, friends, family, to sitting in doctor's appointments all day, every day, listening to people tell you all the things that are wrong with you or talk about you as if you're not even there. So it was almost, I guess, like a coping mechanism where I just shut off. I became numb. I mean, that was something that I had to work through. You know, it's not a healthy way, I guess, to live and to process the grief and all the life changes that were thrown at me. And with time, I became less numb and was able to talk about them. But at the beginning, I just completely shut off. It was like it was not even my life that people were talking about. And I was just kind of there. I was just existing, basically.
And what did your rehab look like when you said you started the rehab with this physician, rehab physician? What did that look like?
It was full on. My main rehab was with my neurophysiotherapist. I was seeing her almost every day at the beginning, and then it dropped to 3 times a week and then 2 times a week and then 1 time a week. But she was a big part of my rehab for 2 years. At the 2-year mark, I was discharged from the clinic there. But she basically got me from being a slump in a chair, not being able to walk to 30 minutes in the gym. She got me from not being able to stand on one leg to practicing standing on one leg with my eyes closed, back to jumping on a trampoline. It was, you know, she started my eye therapy for me, and then she kind of pushed me into a direction where she knew different specialists that could help me. So I'm very grateful, and I owe a lot of my achievements to date throughout my recovery to her, because she knew what she was looking for, and then she was able to point me in the right direction of people that could continue to help me once I'd finished my rehab with her. So she was a big part of my first 2 years. An occupational therapist was also at the beginning. My goal was to get back to school, get back to work as soon as possible. So we do a lot of concentration, information processing, multitasking sort of activities at my OT appointments, kind of simulating a classroom environment, like that chaotic, hectic, busy, loud sort of environment that I really wanted to go back into. So they were full on. She did help me. I was very lucky to have her. A psychologist became a big part of my rehab as well, which was probably one of the best things that I ever decided to do. Would highly recommend anybody, no matter what you're going through, needs to speak to someone at some point in your life. And that's not a weakness to recognize. That's a strength. So that was really important to me. And I started working with a behavioral optometrist. So that was for my visual injury. So she's helped me a lot with daily exercises to practice getting my brain and my eyes to work together again in sync. They're incredibly challenging and they make me feel like absolute shit, but they're very important. And I'm sure there's other things, but I can't remember at the moment. Life of a person with a head injury.
It sounds like a lot though.
It has been a lot, but I'm very grateful to have received the treatment from specialists like that that I did, because I know that there's so many other people who've had the same injuries, if not worse than me, not being taken seriously or not, you know, not knowing where to begin and just kind of going through life by themselves wondering what's going on. So I couldn't imagine being in that position. So I've been very fortunate.
Do you think this was because of your GP, what they originally did?
100%. 100%. He recognised that something wasn't right and he's the one that got the ball rolling for me. So I owe a lot of my rehab and the opportunities that I've had to succeed and to get better were all because of him.
So now, are you still doing rehab or what does your life look like now in terms of that?
I'm still doing rehab. It's not as frequent as every day like it first started. And a lot of the things that I started off with, I've, you know, been discharged, which has been amazing. But my rehab still consists of seeing my behavioural optometrist. She's still a big part of my rehab. Daily exercises at home, and then I have appointments with her maybe once a month to check in on my progress. I'm still going up to the brain injury rehab unit every 3 months for big meetings with my rehab physician. She's still overseeing my progress and my treatment, which I'm very thankful for. And I still see my psych, not as often or as regular, but it's really nice to have him still in my life, that I'm able to check in and talk to him about things that might come up with my balance and exercises that my neurophysio was helping me with. A regular physio is now taking over and has put together a Pilates program for me, which I'm really enjoying. So I go and do that once a week under her guidance, which has helped me regain a lot of my balance and core control and skills that I did lose in my fall. And I've started with a personal trainer in the gym, which has been awesome. I've gone from not being able to walk more than 5 minutes to back in the gym, which is really good. And that's a big part of my ongoing recovery too.
So it sounds like you've come a long way. Does your injury still affect your day-to-day life now?
Yes, it definitely does. I think neuro fatigue is just a big killer to anyone that's gone through concussion or any sort of brain injury. It really does take over every aspect of your life. You really have to, which I'm thankful I was a really good planner before my accident, but you really do have to plan your day a lot more if you have any kind of fatigue. Things like showering, things like being in the kitchen and making breakfast or lunch or dinner, just knowing how much energy that's going to take out of your day and then how much energy you're left with to do basic things like try and go to work or drive to an appointment or sit on the couch and speak with your family, like all those things, you don't realize how much energy they use and they do take up. So you have to really, really plan your day and your week. I book things in advance. I know that if I have a big event coming up on a Saturday, that, you know, the day before, my Friday is going to look incredibly slow and restful, and that I know that I'm going to need a couple of days after that event to recover. So it's all been trial and error to get to this point, but fatigue management is really, really important. And yeah, just being able to hold a job, you know, working full-time or part-time requires a great deal of energy, and that's something that unfortunately you do lack after a head trauma.
Do you think that your mindset has changed? Like you said that at the beginning your whole thing was you wanted to get back to work. Are you now more focused on looking after yourself and getting yourself better, or do you still have that same mindset?
It took me a good year to let go of work. And I don't know why it took me that long. Looking back, I think it's just something that I had to go through. But that first year, I was trying to do all my rehab almost every single day and then trying, making myself, pushing myself to go back to work, whether it was 1 hour a day, 2 hours a day. Sometimes I'd push myself to 3 hours a day and then just completely conk out by the time I got home. But it was still my top priority. And getting better and rehab and recovery was my second. And I think I'd just reached breaking point a year in where I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. I can't live this way. It's not healthy for me. It wasn't helping my students at school. It was just a really, really unhappy and unhealthy way that I was surviving. I wasn't living. I was just trying to survive and trying to get through. So when I'd made that decision a year in, with a big push from my doctors, and I think they had been trying to tell me this for a year, it finally sunk in that I did leave work behind me for the time being and solely focused on my rehab and recovery. And I think it was a control thing and the feeling of not wanting to let go of who I was. And that whole year, who I was, and the years before that, who I was and my sense of purpose and sense of self was all about my job. I said this a lot, but it's true. One of the first things you ask somebody when you meet them the first time is, what do you do for a living? And I'm a teacher. And I had no idea, and it scared me about my answer to that question if I took myself out of work. I don't know. What do I do? I'm like, who am I? What else do I say? I had no idea. So relinquishing that control was super scary. But I know now that my worth and who I am as a person is not what I do for a living or how successful I am or how much money I make. My worth and sense of self and sense of purpose in this world is more to do with the values that I hold closest to me and what I believe in and what type of person that I want to be. So I really basically had to relearn and reteach myself that. I'd lost who I was and I had to rebuild myself from the ground up again. And that was really, really scary, but something that I'm really grateful to have gone through. Now, I feel like I've probably gone through something that not many other people would get a chance to do. Like, how often do you sit down and go take away all those superficial characteristic things in your life? And what are you left with? And I don't think many people will sit and answer that to the extent that I do now.
I 100% agree. I went through exactly the same thing. And what you've said has just sounds like me talking, I think. What I went through, exactly. It took me about a year to come to terms with everything. And then exactly the same process. People do. What do you do? That's the first thing people say.
So I don't know. Let me come up with something fake to say. Yeah.
But I do think that as a society, we need to think about that. It's like, that's not who people are. You know, it's not everything that you are as a person.
And I'm really conscious about what I ask people now as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to get to know the type of person they are, not what they do for a living, because I know that that doesn't define their whole self.
I do think that that's one good thing, I guess, if you could call it, that comes out of going through things like this, is that you are forced to do that. Like, whereas, like you said, otherwise you wouldn't have done it.
No.
So I think that is one good thing that does come out of situations, unfortunate situations like this in general.
Yeah, I agree.
So at that year mark, though, you did start your blog called The Orange Butterfly. Can you explain to us what that's about and why you decided to start that?
Yes. I was actually encouraged by my neurophysio to start journaling towards the beginning of my recovery. It was more about fatigue management, logging, you know, what I did throughout the day, how fatigued I was, and basically a couple of words or a couple of sentences if I felt up to it about what I did or how I was feeling. And it started to be a part of my daily sort of routine that I really enjoyed. I really looked forward to doing it. And I'd always enjoyed writing, even at school. Like, I loved English. I loved writing. I was always quite good at, you know, writing stories and good with my words. So writing in my diary and journal every night before I went to bed was, something that made me happy. And it was also around that time coming up towards that year mark, between 6 months to a year, where I did notice that some of the people that were around me were starting to drop off. You know, I wasn't able to text or phone call as much as I used to. I wasn't able to go to birthdays or go out for dinners like I used to, if not at all. And some people didn't stick around. And at the time, it really upset me, but I thought that, well, maybe if I could use my words to write a few paragraphs or a sentence about my accident and what I was going through and how I was feeling, that it might help some of, you know, my family and friends to better understand. And that's what I decided to do. I took my journal and the dot points that I'd written and I turned it into something that was legible. And I turned it into a story and I shared it with my family first and a few of my close friends. And I just started to see how much it was helping them. I knew that they believed in what I was going through. I knew that they didn't think that I was making things up, but it's still, there's a barrier there. It was still really hard for them to come across and actually truly understand what I was going through. And I still don't think people only understand and like, unless you live it. And I don't want my family and friends to ever live this, but I did want to help them better understand. And I saw the power that my words had. And I thought that, well, maybe there must be so many other people in this world going through the same things that I am. And maybe my story will help them too. And my best friend helped me create a website, and I decided to publish my story into a blog on a website on my 1 year anniversary. And that's exactly what I did. I think in that first week, I was overwhelmed with messages from people from across the world, people that I'd never even met before, saying that they read my story and they cried because it was like they were reading their life. And they said they had been struggling to find the words to explain it to people. And they said, thankfully now I don't have to, because I just tell everybody to read your blog, because it's basically my life. So I got a lot of thank you messages from people that I'd never met before. I got families messaging me saying that it helped them better understand what their loved one was going through. So thank you. It was so overwhelming in a positive way. And I knew that this was what I was supposed to do with what I had been through. I was supposed to share. I was supposed to write. I was supposed to hopefully use what I had learned to help and support others.
I think as well, like I said before we started recording, your blog is so articulate. Like you're really good at explaining what these things are actually like, but in a way that's not so doom and gloom as well. Obviously it's difficult what you've been through, but I feel like you've got this spin on it that makes it not so dark like a lot of other things can be. And I think maybe a lot of people relate to that too, because you don't always want to be reading or hearing about people that are really down. And I mean, obviously there's times when it is, but I think the spin that you put on it would resonate with so many people in such a positive way, I think, even though it is very difficult what you've been through.
Yeah.
How did that feel to have all those people coming to you, reading your blog and saying that you've made a difference in their life?
It was amazingly overwhelming.
Did you think that would happen? Like when you put it up, what did you think was going to happen?
I really didn't have any expectations. I thought my friends and family would read it and that would be it. No, when I started receiving messages going, oh, hi, I'm from Ireland or I'm from Canada, I was like, what? But it kind of opened up this whole world that I didn't even know existed as well. So yes, publishing that blog and then creating my like Instagram page and Facebook page, I was able to reach so many other people. And yes, my words were helping them, but they were helping me too. There's a big online community for concussion and brain injury in general, and just disability, chronic illness in general. There are so many people that do share and use their voices for good. And I learned so, so much from just scrolling through Instagram and following pages. And that was a big part of my personal recovery as well, and helped my mental health immensely. So not only, did sharing my blog help others, it helped me just as much.
And what was the reason behind the name, The Orange Butterfly?
I was struggling to come up with a name for my blog that wasn't corny, basically. Everything that I was coming up with sounded so silly. And I knew butterflies represented new life and rebirth. And I think it was just a Google search one afternoon. I was Googling butterfly meanings, and then I came across a website that showcased different colored butterflies and their different meanings. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that. And I was scrolling through, and I was purposely looking if they had an orange butterfly meaning, because orange was my favorite color. And I looked through, and they did have an orange butterfly meaning, and it just fit. I was like, oh, it was meant to be. It was just all about, spotting an orange butterfly symbolizes, your ability to think positively, embracing new life and pathways that you might take and the challenges that you might be faced with in a positive way. And it symbolized rebirth, new beginnings. And I just loved using those words. And I thought that it was the perfect fit for the type of thing that I wanted to create. So I stole it, the orange butterfly.
I love
made
that.
Made it though. My own.
It sounds perfect for what you're doing.
It was.
So you have gone on to do awareness work and community work around concussion and traumatic brain injuries. Can you tell us a bit about what you're doing now?
Yeah, I've been very fortunate to use my voice to create change and bring about community education, because that's something of really big importance to me now. A lot of people through brain injury recovery feel really misunderstood, and that's not going to change unless we talk about it. So I was given the opportunity to share my story on the front page of the Adelaide Messenger, the newspaper, and that was the first place beside my blog that I told my story, and that was really, really powerful for me. And then I just kind of started getting asked to be interviewed for podcasts, and they were really, really fun. I enjoyed that. And I think like Instagram, my social media page really, really helped with those, getting those opportunities. I sat on a worldwide concussion panel last year, which was amazing. That was with the boys in Canada from Heads Up. Follow their Instagram page for more info if you like. They're great. And it's also given me a lot of opportunities throughout like volunteering that I wouldn't have had if it weren't for my accident and it weren't for sharing my story. I do some rehab mentor work here in Adelaide with Brain Injury SA, which I really love. And I do some volunteering with an after-school social skills program for teenagers with autism, which I really, really enjoy. And I've recently started a few months ago this group that meets at the last Saturday of every month in the Adelaide Botanical Gardens called Butterfly Hour. I really wanted Butterfly Hour to be about connecting the wider community and the brain injury community together in a way that was going to benefit both of us. So basically, on the last Saturday of every month in the morning, we meet at the Botanical Gardens and we spend an hour in nature, basically talking about the importance that nature has on our brain health and our overall well-being, and how spending time outdoors does support us both mentally and physically. And people come and they chat and meet new people. Some people go for a walk and they grab a coffee, or they might bring a book and sit on a picnic rug, and basically the hour is theirs to do whatever they want. And they've been really, really successful the last few months. And I hope that's something that I can continue in the future and will only get bigger and better. But yeah, that's been really nice to see people connect. So it's just kind of opened up different opportunities and experiences for me, which I'm really, really enjoying. And they're all to do with raising awareness, just spreading a lot more community education, because we're not going to come together with, you know, segregation being a big part of our lives at the moment. And I hope to change that.
Do you think that there is a lack of awareness? Because, for instance, I'll personally say I don't know too much about concussion and brain injury. And what we see generally is, say, for instance, football players who've had a concussion, and then what we see next is they seem to just get up and get on with things. And then we see the other end, where people have had severe brain injuries, where it's obvious by looking at them that there's something physically wrong. And I think at the moment there's, for instance, Move for Lex, which is great awareness around that end of the spectrum.
Yes.
But we don't really see anything in the middle.
Yep.
So I know people can't see you now like I can, but you don't look like there's anything wrong with you. So you're not on that end, but then you're obviously not on the other end where you've gotten up and you've got on with your life. Is there a lack of awareness, do you think, for that middle section of brain injuries?
100%. Before my accident, I didn't know much about brain injury. And basically, like you said, I'd known AFL players getting concussion, and then you kind of have an idea of the other side of the spectrum with regards to like a severe brain injury. But I think in the last 3 years, I don't know if my ears have been more open to it, but I feel like we're talking about it a lot more now, which is great. But 20% of people that get concussed or have mild brain injuries don't recover in those first 2 weeks like the 80% of other people with concussions.
That's a big percentage.
Sorry, there's that 20% of people. That is, it's a lot. 20% of people after they get concussed don't recover in those initial first 2 weeks, and it might take months, years for them to recover. And we don't talk about that. I had no idea. I had no idea that even existed. And yes, I hope that my blog is shining a light on some of those people that fall through the cracks, because I certainly have. And I think when you use the word mild traumatic brain injury, I feel like people automatically put you in that category of, oh, you're not that bad.
Yeah.
And that's not the case at all. You know, mild, that term mild is only given to a brain injury if that person didn't lose consciousness. It's got nothing to do with how much that brain injury has affected that person's life. So my injury hasn't affected my life mildly in any sense.
Yeah.
It's only given to me because I didn't lose consciousness. And like 90% of people who get a concussion don't lose consciousness. But there's a lot of misconceptions with regards to concussion and brain injury in the community, and ones that I held before I experienced it, before I lived it myself. And that's the tricky thing. I think people are only open to wanting to learn about things that affect them personally. And I was one of them, because I probably wouldn't have learnt as much about brain injury as I have now. But it starts with those people, and hopefully it will spread to the rest of the community. Yeah. And you have AFL players now that are speaking up, saying that, you know, they're retiring in their 20s because they haven't recovered from their concussions. You have AFL players and like the NFL players in America talking about CTE and the fact that, you know, people are committing suicide at a really young age because of, you know, this brain disease that they got from playing football. And it's just, it needs to be taken a lot more seriously than what it is now. And I feel like we're getting there, but we still have a very long way to go.
One of the first things I learned about concussion was from the movie Concussion with Will Smith, that was talking about that, the footy players in America.
Yes.
I was so disturbed by that because I had no idea. And yeah, I remember looking into it after that and going, oh my gosh, this is actually a thing. That's scary. And I think obviously the sporting clubs are now being a lot more aware of it and putting in protocols and stuff. But sounds like for you, the mild concussion diagnosis can have a huge spectrum of what it actually presents as, which is not really out there as much. So that's the work that you're doing to try and raise awareness for that.
Yes. Yes, I hope to.
So what do you hope for the future for you?
I hope that I continue with doing whatever makes me happy. I think I'm less about making these big, you know, lists of goals that I want to achieve by a certain age or a certain time in my life or my career. And I'm more about just embracing things that are going to make me happy. I think just going through and living these last 3 years, you know, you're failing at things that you once could do independently. You're grieving the loss of your old self. You know, it's been heartbreak after heartbreak, and I just am at a stage in my life now where I just want to be happy. So I'm embracing opportunities that come my way, and I hope that by just having that outlook and having that sort of perspective and living my life that way, that things will happen when they're supposed to happen. And so I'm kind of a little bit more open with myself and my future now, but I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, it sounds really good. Sounds like a great way to be. So I do have one final question that I ask everyone at the end of their interview. It may be the same as what you've said, but just said, I'm not sure, but we'll see. If you could go back in time and give your younger self before the accident one piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh, don't worry if your plan doesn't work out, because I'm telling you it's not going to work out. But it's not the end of the world. And I think my younger self and myself 3 years ago, it was the end of the world to me. But now, 3 years on, I know that it's not. So being a little bit more open and a little less concerned with my life goals and what, you know, what my future is going to look like on paper, just embracing things that are going to come my way and that it will be okay. I've got the strength to take it on and fight my way through it.
Well, you seem to be doing just that.
Thank you.
thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. It's been absolutely lovely to speak with you. And I will put your details in the show notes for anyone that wants to connect with you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inspirational Tales. If you're enjoying the podcast, I'd love it if you could please share it with your family and friends so that we can inspire more people. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, please don't forget to leave us a rating or a review, and make sure that you have subscribed or followed the podcast on whichever platform that you are listening to it on so that you can stay up to date as new episodes are released. Thanks again, and I look forward to you joining me for the next episode of Inspirational Tales.